My name is Victoria Matei.
My name is Olga Araceli.
And we are both undocumented women of color.
Intro music. Boom, 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 boom. Ba, 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 bum, bum, bow.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to A Shot of Truth with us. So what have you been up to, Olga? Even though we just spent the entire weekend together.
Oh, that's a good question. So this weekend was your first rodeo.
And it was.
Like, actual first Mexican rodeo. So Vicky went down to visit me. I live in Tacoma, but the rodeo was in Roy. So that was Saturday, and this was part of, like, a traditional, like, party that we have for the people from my pueblo, so where I'm from. And they do this every August. And here, it's only one day, but over there, it lasts, like, almost the whole month of August.
I was having a hard time keeping up.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot.
But, like, people are used to it. Like, it's day by day. There's different bands playing and just food all throughout the community. And people will usually just go home to sleep, you know, for, like, I don't know, 3-4 hours, maybe less. And then get up again in the morning to party.
And go party.
All over again.
Yesterday was an experience of drinking for about 10 hours straight. And by the end of it, I don't even know what I was doing. I was talking to everybody and anyone. Yeah. But it was an experience, and I don't know that I could do it again. Not anytime soon. Not gonna lie.
So, Vicky, what have you been up to?
I guess my weekly check-in would be that I've been working and getting ready to go to Washington, D.C., which I'm really excited about. That's in like 9 days where, yeah, I get to be with the dream team. I've also been preparing for just kind of like speaking things that I have going on within, mm-hmm, the next several weeks. And it feels good to still have like speaking gigs and stuff, because for the longest time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to keep doing my public speaking and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm ready to, and I'm finding that fire in me again to continue doing that. Even though like I'm so much better used, like I'm so used to doing it with you. And not having you to do it with, it kind of makes it a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited. It'll hopefully take me somewhere someday.
Yeah, I think it already has. I mean, from what I observe and like notice, you've been able to meet a lot of great people. And I'm really excited for you to be like on this journey. It has been like weird not working together, because we were
so closely working, yeah, together in the past. Yeah. I know, right?
It's,
yeah, and I think we should kind of talk about that today after like recent current events that have been happening here in the Bellingham community.
Mm-hmm.
But our last podcast was really focused on, you know, the like DACA decision and like the Judge Hannon stuff. So if you listen to the last podcast, you know, it was like really pessimistic, especially in regards to kind of what the ruling was going to be with Judge Hannon in Texas. But to our surprise, it kind of went our way. We like, this was good news for our community, and we haven't had good news for a long time. So, you know, DACA applications are still being taken. And, you know, at the end of the day, we do mention like that is not the solution. That is not the solution for our community, for ourselves, for anything. But it is definitely something that is keeping us engaged,
mm-hmm,
and as a community really working and striving towards something that we all deserve.
Yeah. So this update happened August 31st. And like we had mentioned before, right, everything kind of looked like he was going to
essentially get rid of DACA.
Yeah. And go in favor of this case. So luckily he didn't. So like you said, everything kind of just remains the same. DACA renewals keep being accepted. Unfortunately, still no new applications are being accepted.
The difficult thing, though, is that, you know, it was kind of like we mentioned, kind of a game where we were spending money out of fear and money that we didn't have, because I still ended up taking a loan out,
mm-hmm,
to pay for that DACA renewal, and now I have to pay it, you know, like I've never taken out a loan before. Yeah. So that was kind of an experience in itself.
I think with this ruling, at least comes a little bit of sense of relief, right? For all those who unfortunately maybe didn't have the money to pay for the processing fees and everything like right away. So there's that. Unfortunately, we don't know how long this kind of uncertainty, or at least, you know,
how long this is going to last, because they could definitely appeal it.
Mm-hmm.
But chances are they might not. I'm not entirely sure what it kind of stands for. Like you saw, it was a complete surprise to both of us.
Yes.
But we'll take that as a win for now.
Mm-hmm.
So what recently happened in Bellingham was there was a raid. I believe it was called Granite Precast.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what I've heard from community organizers and some of the families that were affected at a community event that I attended was that the employer decided to send, you know, names for E-Verify, which I don't think in Washington state is required. But they did that. And, you know, instead, essentially they saw that there was multiple people working in the company that did not have proper documentation, whatever. And so ICE didn't raid the workplace.
No, it was on either close to their homes or on their commute to work.
Yeah.
Which is the scariest part, because, you know, you're just going about your day thinking it's going to go normal. And then.
And you're being these people are being spied on,
targeted.
Exactly. It was overwhelming to hear that it's a new tactic for ICE, and I'm sure it's not the first, you know, there's so many tactics that are incoming and growing or whatever, but this one in particular, that they were able to find every person, stop them, asking them for the information, and just immediately knowing their names, their last names, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
These are 28 families that were affected in our community.
Yeah.
And this is not the first time this has happened. Essentially what we're hearing right now from the families is that they're being helped to help organize, you know, something that C2C has taught various people in our communities is that has to happen within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that kind of helping to support each other and, you know, helping them with whatever necessities they need. Like right now it was getting them gas vouchers or gift cards or things so that each individual family could get their needs met.
Essentially. Yeah. Cause now they need additional money to sustain themselves, mm-hmm. because, and more money for the lawyer fees and the bail bonds, et cetera.
And I'm thinking construction, right? And I'm thinking males. And so I'm thinking the providers of the families, right? So now it could be the wives or the children of these families no longer have that, or are thinking, okay, I will no longer have that. How am I going to, you know, how are we going to survive?
So something that I won't forget from the community event was there was 4 families there that, you know, decided to show up and tell folks what was happening. And there was a young mother and her newborn child. The baby was not any more than 3 to 4 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And that was difficult to watch. And, you know, it was just the community got to see it firsthand, because constantly we hear people say how many undocumented people are in the community? How come they don't come to these events? How come this? How come that? Well, people don't essentially. It's not easy to trust people in mm-hmm. this kind of work, and or also they don't have time.
Yeah.
They're working 2 jobs each.
Mm-hmm.
Taking care of their children, making sure that, you know, they go about their lives on top of this thing that just weighs on their shoulders every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think what we try to do the most is just to, you know, live a normal life, not trying to think about, okay, I'm undocumented or I'm not going to go out. Or I think especially here, because we live so close to the border, I would try to think about that in a way where it won't affect me in my other daily, you know, tasks and all that.
Even driving to work, driving your children to school, mm-hmm. all those things are things you have to essentially think about. Something that we learned also was that, you know, the sheriff, the police department, they all knew that this was going to happen. They've known a ton of the work that the community has put in for, like, the Bellingham Sanctuary City, and which we'll talk more about. But, like, these people that are here to supposedly protect our communities aren't doing their job when they're letting our people be targeted. And mm-hmm. I know that these people have federal warrants, but, like, these people are a part of the community. They're not doing anything besides trying to provide and work. To think, like, you know, they're exploited in the workplace and then exploited by a system that benefits off of them yet doesn't fucking care. Like, it's makes me fucking sick. There's a lot of other instances where this has also happened. Do you have the timeline pulled up?
Yes. Give me one second.
So over the last year, or about actually a year ago in the summer, I spent my time working or organizing and volunteering with an organization called Community to Community Development. And they had all these binders full of, like, news clippings and things that have happened in Bellingham City that had to do with immigration or farm worker rights, worker rights, etc. And I just started going through them, and I was just amazed with the in-depth history that this city has with immigrants and people of color and workers and farm workers. And I mean, not just Bellingham, but, like, Whatcom County in general. So I was working on this timeline that has taken a good amount of time. Olga's pulling it up on her phone right now. But do you want to read us the first thing on the timeline?
Yeah. So it starts with 2005, and this is the Minutemen. So anti-immigration white nationalist group. It was founded in 2004. And they were armed and self-proclaimed, like, border patrols.
The funny thing about this is that, like, Border Patrol themselves and the sheriff, actually, I take that back. Border Patrol themselves did not want the Minutemen there. They made their jobs more difficult. So the Minutemen were essentially nationalist people that decided that they deserved to protect their borders because they could do it better. Yeah. Sure. And I remember there was something I heard where the sheriff was, like, essentially defending the Minutemen and saying, like, well, they're not really doing anything harmful to the community. But anyway, okay, continue.
That continue. Isn't already harmful enough. So that was 2005. So then we go on to 2006 with the Northwest Linen Raid. And about 26 men and women were detained, and some were deported immediately, and others were awaiting trial. And I think this is really when it started, that family started to organize. There's photos, you know, and proof of the women that were affected, as well as the children of the families. And they're out there demonstrating, I guess, the pain, you know, that and the family separation that things like this cause.
Most definitely. So the next raid is in 2009, the Yamato raid. So they had 75 ICE agents to detain about 28 people. A lot of the detainees were released because of the media pressure. And, you know, like, back then, times were different. Because there was so much pressure on what was happening, not only were all of the, like, people that were detained released, they also essentially drove them home. Which is something you don't really hear of. And now this is, you know, after the first one in 2006 and now 2009, like, people are now afraid to call the police department. From this moment forward, no one trusts the police department, whether it's, you know, they're facing domestic violence, whether they're being robbed, you know, like, this isn't, you don't.
Little thing. And I think especially because a lot of, you know, the police were also like, oh, I don't understand you or your accent, you know, and, oh, I need an interpreter. And their interpreter, or their form of interpreter, was like an ICE agent, right? You know, and of course, once that happens, then if you don't know your rights, or, you know, that they're not supposed to question you in terms of citizenship, then once they're like, oh, are you a citizen, or, you know, And what do you, you're just kind of like shocked. Okay, now I have to tell them or else.
Exactly. So that's kind of what happened in 2010 was that, you know, the Bellingham Police Department was calling Border Patrol to translate for them when they weren't able to communicate with community members. So how often is that happening in our communities, especially in border cities?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of the smallest border cities. There's so many more throughout the nation. And we're at the Canadian-Mexico border. Oh, my God. LOL.
The U.S.-Canadian border.
And again, that just kind of made people not trust the police department. And or, you know, why would they trust like city hall officials or city council officials, county council? Like what have they ever done for those communities, let alone even insert themselves in spaces where they are?
Yeah. So moving forward now to 2015, and this is Lelo. So this was
a racial profiling case.
Yes. So a Bellingham police officer racially profiled an underage boy named Lelo. And the police department is like still currently being sued.
Yeah, still being sued.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. A few years later. But yeah, so this, you know, young man, I believe from what I remember from his story, was just walking.
No, he was driving. So if you live in Bellingham, which I think some of our listeners do, at least most of them for now, you know that there's a ton of one-way streets. And so this young man like turned on the wrong side of the street, did not have his license, and was turned over to Border Patrol, in which then they took him to the Tacoma Detention Center. So this was like solely based on him being a Latinx brown man. And there's various instances where the lawyers and the people have proven that this was, you know, like this shouldn't have happened. But it did. We haven't heard, well, I haven't heard too much about like what the, you know, final ruling of all of that is, but, you know, I always mention to everybody that I talk to, like, you know, the Bellingham Police Department plays this role of like, no, we're good people. We're here for the community, mm-hmm. community first. And like one of the city council members, I remember him saying, we have the best police department in the world. I say this all the time because it pisses me off. And these are people handing, not only racially profiling people, but handing them over to officials that will deport them.
Yes. And so I'm looking over at Lelo's case because it has been a while since I've read it or seen it. And so what happened was they needed to verify his identification. And then that's how Border Patrol came into the whole scene. And I think what really kind of put this case out there was the Bellingham Police Department didn't issue a ticket or record the incident at all. They didn't.
Yeah, they didn't.
Not even like contact his family. This boy was 15 years old. You know, my social worker kind of mentality is like, okay, he's underage, so you need a parent or guardian. You need to contact the family, right? No matter whether a child is undocumented or not, like this just the thing you do, mm-hmm. right? You see a lost child or you see some like a young adult or somebody doing something wrong or whatever, your first thing is, okay, where's the adult? You know, who do I talk mm-hmm. to? And they didn't. No contact to the family whatsoever. So I can imagine how, I'm assuming his mom or, you know, his caregivers were like, okay, he was just gonna drive to and from maybe and he didn't. And that worry of like, okay, where is he now?
So moving past that, the final, but it's not the final thing on the timeline because there's two other incidents that I need to add to the timeline before I send it off to print. But in 2017, an ordinance relating to city policy with respect to immigration enforcement, equal protection, and equal provision of city services, regardless of immigration status. This was the whole sanctuary, like, Bellingham movement that happened. Mm-hmm. Olga and I dedicated essentially our lives to this on top of going to school,
working,
running Blue Group, like, all these things that we felt like we had to do to, like, essentially live.
Yes. And again, this was after the election, so we felt a strong call to do something and to protect our community and to protect ourselves and everybody else who was also maybe in the future going to join.
Mm-hmm. And this movement grew pretty quickly. Essentially, we started a petition that got several thousand signatures that were delivered directly to City Hall in regards to, this is what undocumented people in this community are asking of you. Mm-hmm. Things such as an oversight board made up of community members that they don't oversee the police, but it's kind of like a civil rights office where people come and report things to community members that they essentially trust and have worked with for years.
Mm-hmm.
Again, something that was completely ignored and brushed off. Other things such as, obviously, not working with Border Patrol or ICE, which they say they don't do, but we've just listed several instances where they do. It's frustrating to go into their offices and be like, this is our issue, this is what we want you to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like, oh, we don't know what you're talking about, like, this is not happening in our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally dismiss, you know, our experiences and like everything that we're letting them know that we need, even though they're very like, oh, we're here for you, and we're, you know, we're a very welcoming and community.
And Bellingham is called the city of subdued excitement, which means that it's pretty mellow. And so when things like this happen in our community, they kind of get shoved under the rug in the sense that there are people always organizing, but it happens in a way where either it's normalized or hidden from the community that people don't notice it. Some might, like, some it might affect greatly.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a lot of people that it just completely goes over their head. That, like, this raid, I have not seen it in the papers. I have not seen it in the news. The only thing that I have seen from, like, about any of it is through community to community development.
Yeah, and through, like, our local friends and, like, mostly people of color, you know, who are connected to this issue. And to all of our, I guess, white allies, I think you should be spreading that out, too. I don't know if I've really seen it from, I have a lot of white friends on Facebook. So I don't think I've even seen it from them. And that when the elections kind of started, that was something that I brought up too. I was like, okay, what are you all going to do now? You mm-hmm. know, now that we need our help, now that we need your help, actually.
And when we started organizing with community to community development with Rosalinda Guillen, Maru Mora, Edgar,
Junga,
a bunch of amazing people, like, you know, these people have devoted their lives to just ensuring that their communities are safe.
Mm-hmm.
And being in a border city, that makes it really, there's a lot of things that, again, go unseen that these people essentially help bring
to the light
and make it accessible for people to start to contribute and organize.
Mm-hmm.
And when we asked, you know, like, what do we do? Their response was like, go to City Hall. Go to city council and tell them what's up. Tell them what you're going through and tell them what you need. And when we did that, oh, God, I think about that first.
The first
time.
They were there.
It
was very, I don't know, I think, like, nerve wracking. And for a lot of us, it was the first time that we were going to let everybody in this community know. Right,
about that we were here.
That we were here.
That we were, like, that concerned.
We were, yeah, and we were students. This was basically outing ourselves and also, you know, kind of like our position. And so I think that was a very intensive.
I think we've talked about the first time we've gone in another episode, but quick recap. We essentially didn't tell community members that we were going to be there. We did tell the media. We did tell Cairo King. There was another one that showed up. But we did not put out a statement whatsoever about what we were going to go do at City Hall. When we got there, there was a few people there already, like, ready to oppose us. You can just, like, feel that, like, aura of hate. That they didn't, that, like, it's not just, like, that they hate just, you know, us, but kind of this, like, aura of that they hate themselves too. And I could just, like, this guy was just, like, piercing me and eating me, eating, like, my soul with his eyes.
With his look.
And I remember he was like, what are you in for? And I'm like, oh, to talk about the, like, sanctuary movement and blah, blah, this. And he's like, huh, really? I'm here to oppose you. And I was like, yeah, I know. Because I felt it. I could feel that. Like,
yes.
And I remember, like, not only was that super nerve-wracking, I remember leaving feeling really unsafe, feeling like there was people watching every move that I was making.
Yeah, because again, like, that was, you know, that was the first time we were going to be out here in this community, at least for me, like, letting others know that we were undocumented, and then that we were from Western. And so I feel like that just, like, okay, now they know we're here, they know where we go to school, and they'll probably, like, know kind of like our typical, you know, like, where we hang out and do, like, just be around, you know? I think.
So what essentially happened was we were able to organize dignity vigils that happened on Mondays. There's actually one tomorrow because they're still going on that we should go to. But the dignity vigils usually happen at the Bellingham bus station on Mondays around 11, I believe, or noon. Gotta double check that. But it's essentially a space for people to protest and, you know, create visibility. That's the biggest, like, thing about any kind of organizing and movement is you need to make it accessible for everyone. So when you're, you know, working on being visible to not just the common people in Bellingham, but people in spaces that aren't always, you know, looked out for, you make the movement stronger. And so these dignity vigils happened every week for over the last, like, year and a few months, and every Monday people are out there. And again, it reminds, like, City Hall and, like, the police department and other members, like, we're still here, we're still, like, present. We're still engaged. We're not gonna let you just, like, throw this whole
thing under the bus.
Exactly. It took a lot of organizing on our end, but it took also a lot of our mental health. And I think that's something that we kind of also set aside. And I think it's something that it kind of made us grow up a little faster than I was really anticipating. So along with the dignity vigils that are still happening, there was dignity dialogues. So now we were creating not only a space of visibility, but a space for conversation. A space for people to get engaged and kind of hear what was happening from the people directly. And at the time, the people that were most, you know, that were fully engaged in giving that to people, like, the community, was, it was Olga, it was Jose, it was Maru, it was me, and the support that we got from C2C and community members. I would say that these dialogues had usually about 10 to 30 people, just kind of depending on, I guess, the national situation. And I think they were effective. You know, not only were we there to, like, we weren't there to just educate people. We were there to mobilize people. We were there to give people action steps on this is what we're going to do next to keep mobilizing the community to make effort in making change. And, oh, God, the outcome was kind of harsh.
It was. We didn't, so our, I think our goal and intentions were to get this, was to get the oversight board. Because I think, Once we, like, community members saw that there was people in like, kind of that space that they could trust and they can go to talk about, you know, their issues, whether it was domestic violence or they were just feeling insecure or about, like, their safety, I think then that's when we can really, like, build a safer, you know, community and really make sure the police are doing kind of
what their... is best for the community, mm-hmm. instead of protecting the state.
Yes.
So the ordinance that ended up passing was nothing that the community had presented. They passed something that essentially kept everything the same. It didn't really help anyone.
No, it was just,
it was kind of a pat on the back for them to be like, oh, we did something and the community's gonna be so happy that we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, prior to that meeting, they had met with me and a couple community members to discuss what this oversight board would look like or what we would do moving forward. And it was supposed to be 3 city council members and then us. And they couldn't have all 4 of them there because then there would have to be this public announcement that we were having this meeting. But the other people at the table were the mayor, city officials, the chief, the, like, I guess the police chief at the time was out because he had surgery. So there was someone else stepping in for him, the attorney for the city, etc. So all these people were here. And now you have me, this college student that had no fucking idea what I was talking about or doing. And I'm just sitting there like, I feel really intimidated. 2, I kind of feel like you're all just kind of in, like, making fun of me in a mm-hmm. way. Because they knew I didn't know, you know? I don't, yeah, like, yeah. They didn't know. I don't know.
It I just think pisses I me off. Went with you one
you
or
did,
two
yeah.
meetings.
Yeah, you did.
That one. Yeah, and it just, it is that whole, like, sense of power that they, you know, that they, like, carry with them. I feel like that kind of gets you a little bit intimidated at the same time. And being the college, you know? Being in college, you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm
doing. And this is the first time I did anything like this.
Yeah.
And it has made me realize I really hate politicians.
Mm. It's interesting because actually this past weekend, so I'm going to go off track real quick. But it's very important. So I missed it. I belong to part of the Purépecha community and we just had a guest come in. His name is Samuel. Come in from Chirán. And so if you are familiar with that, so Chirán is like a community down in Michoacán, Mexico, and they have built like their own like autonomous community, totally kicked out.
They kicked out the police.
The police, the government officials, anybody who didn't really
abide by the community.
By the community and our rules and our like Purépecha, you know, traditions. And so what he was telling, he did a speech. And so he was telling us about how, like, things were, how things worked over there. And something that kind of just, like, stuck with me and that has been really, like, making my wheels turn as I am learning on what kind of pathway I want to walk. Is he's like, there's mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, you know, everybody fighting for these like democratic parties or just like, you know, parties in general, when in reality, like this, that system isn't ours. We didn't believe in that system. That's like a very westernized idea. And I think we need to go back to actually how things were. You know, a lot of our indigenous communities, they were like councils or and everybody kind of like talk to each other from could be like this little subgroup would elect somebody to talk to another.
As more of a community.
Yeah. And so like that just kind of like stuck with me because a lot of like growing and learning is also learning to unlearn everything you did. And so to me, I was like, okay. That makes sense, you know, to have like the community oversight boards. It'd be kind of like the same thing, you know? Like what? Because only the community and the people that live in that community
know what they need. Most definitely. And that's something that they feared of the most was like, oh, people are going to be overseeing our police department.
But it's not. It's us, the community, telling them what we need.
So the ordinance that we presented did not pass. They passed their own bullshit ordinance. I remember at several of those meetings, there was like up to 300 people there that were telling them, you know, like,
don't do it.
That's not what the community asked you. That's not what we need. These are not the appropriate steps to take moving forward. And even after they passed that bullshit ordinance, they haven't even connected or talked with people moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Something that, you know, as Western did, was organize students to do, like, to lobby with city officials about all of that. And every time it's the same thing of there is only so much we can do.
That damn phrase.
And there's only so much risk we are willing to put on the rest of the community. With the, like, sanctuary cities, like, losing funding. Like, that really scared a lot of people, and that's fair. But why, again, do we have to justify our existence and try to justify it through this means of money that...
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't even go into how I feel about that. I could go forever. So, you know, I think that Olga and I learned a lot, and Jose, you know, engaging in those efforts,
mm-hmm.
and working really hard in... You know, because that wasn't our full-time job. That was on top of everything else we were doing.
Yeah.
That was an experience. And one that really taught me a lot about politics, people, and myself.
Yeah.
And I would do it all over again. But it was really frustrating. So moving forward on the timeline, we have Maru Mora, who is a community organizer, not only in, you know, this Bellingham area, but in the state, has done
whole country
international work. Mm-hmm. She's phenomenal. But her getting a letter from ICE directly to her house asking her to show up to court, because essentially, you know, that happened because of her political activism.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this earlier as well. And now this next thing that, and to keep you all updated, what has happened so far is that the court date has been extended, but Maru Mora's daughter was able, is now able to petition for her because she turned 21. So I'm not entirely sure where they are with that process, but now this raid happened. And now this raid, again, has affected a huge proportion of our community. And I remember at the community event, I was kind of like overwhelmed that there was this like white dude that was just like, couldn't help but take up a lot of space. But it was because he was so angry. He was so mad. He like couldn't believe that this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, so how much money would it cost to bail these 28 people out?
Wow.
And Hannah Stone was there, who's one of the immigration lawyers that's been doing.
Huge shout out to her.
Yeah. We've given her many shout outs because she's the best. She was like, honestly, about $15,000 each.
Wow.
And everybody was dead silent because this is a very costly thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this man was just so angry. And it wasn't because he wanted to take up space. It wasn't because he felt entitled. It wasn't because he didn't understand. It was because he couldn't
genuinely believe this was happening.
Exactly. And yes. He doesn't even know those families. And mm-hmm. he was out of this, like, just like about to blow.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel it on him.
Mm-hmm.
And various other people in that room felt that way too.
Yeah. I don't want to... I hate giving credit to the fact that this had to happen for a lot of people to realize just what was going on in our communities.
Exactly. Like, how many more of us
mm-hmm.
have to be detained for that city council to do something?
Yes. So part of me is always like a little bit relieved, you know, that more people are waking up. But a big part of me also hurts
that it's taken this long and this many people.
Yeah.
So what community to community and the families that were affected are asking are for people to donate money and gas vouchers,
Visa cards.
And Visa cards to the families that were affected. All those can be delivered to Buff, which is a church here in Bellingham. If you want some more info, we can include it in the notes, but just please help and donate, whether it's $5, $10, whatever it is. Like, you know, this is going to a good cause. Mm-hmm. And these are people in our community that deserve essentially human dignity.
Yes. And if you can't donate right now, in the future, whenever you can, donate still to community, because their work isn't just when a raid happens or, you know, when a big issue arises. It's a day-to-day thing.
Yep, a day-to-day thing. And if you aren't able to donate, something else that you can do is you can write to City Hall, write to county, like, officials. These are, you know, this is not anything new. These people knew this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. They keep defending themselves on this is why we don't do this. This is why we, like, have to have this loophole of this or that. Like, write to them and tell them, like, this is not going to keep happening in our community, and this is what you need to do about it. And you've been told by several people that live this life.
Yes.
So please do that. Like, please get engaged. Even if it's just that, you can even schedule a meeting with them. Walk right
or
in there.
Or call. I think they even take text.
They'll take calls. They'll
text,
take,
right? I mean, feel like I've heard that
some
before.
Of them.
But what, and like anything, every little, you know, piece helps.
I have a presentation coming up this Friday, and it's to, like, it's to a bunch of staff members at the university, and over 200 people attend, and it's this huge thing. And that's going to be my, you know, I never present without telling people, like, here's an action step.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be my action step. Like, we're going to write to City Hall right now. I'm going to cut my presentation in half so we can do this, because there's no benefit here if we're not going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll leave you with that. Just kind of like food for thought that it's not just money that, you know,
you can invest or contribute to.
There's various ways to get involved and be engaged. And part of it, you know, the number one thing I say is be present.
Mm-hmm.
Always be present.
There's nothing. Be present. Learn, you know, unlearn unhealthy things or things that
challenge yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just all part of it. Well, thanks for listening to A Shot of Truth with Vicky and
Olga Naseli.
And we will catch you next time when we hope to have one of our really close friends come on for another interview. Because, you know, we don't want this to just be a serious podcast. We also Yes. want it to be fun. And we also want to showcase our personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's called A Shot of Truth for a reason.
We have yet to take a shot this time.
I took one.
Oh.
Maybe two. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at ashotoftruthpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us a nice tweet at @shotoftruthpodcast or look on Instagram for behind the scene photos at @shotoftruthpodcast. You can also find us on Patreon and donate to our podcast at @shotoftruthpodcast. You can just assume it's all Shot of Truth Podcast. Podcast, podcast, podcast. A Shot of Truth Podcast, A Shot of Truth Podcast, A Shot of Truth Podcast.
Be-doop-boo, outro music, this is a sound of the outro music.
This has been a Sundance Science production.